What's it like when one of your friends on death row is led away to be executed?
You have a prepaid call from
William A. Abura,
an inmate at the California State Prison, San Quentin. This call and your telephone number will be monitored and recorded.
I had to be a different police guy, which is the guy who walked the walkways of San Quentin death row, and without a gang, without a group of people around me, it was just me.
Soon after you went into to be on death row, and you didn't really understand the prison workout system so much, but then he said, we're going to do 75 sets of it. To me, that seems extreme. So I'm wondering if there's a danger of overtraining, wearing yourself out so that you're...
No, that's actually funny. That's funny. I'll tell you why. That's a good one, man. No, I'll tell you why.
Welcome to Death Row Diaries. I am Matt Ralston.
And I'm William Navarro.
And we have a really interesting topic today, Bill, because our astute listeners will remember that last week we were talking about kind of the evolution of serial killers, where they've gone, how they've changed and mutated. And then I was talking to you about a case about the Long Island serial killer, Lisk. Giglo Beach killer. Giglo? Is that how you say it? And
Gilgo.
So they said that you said, hey, I think this is actually kind of what I was talking about on that topic, because the guy's been around for a while. And, you know, really, we haven't gotten too far on pegging the guy, even though there's been an arrest. You know, we don't know what's going on with this, really, do we?
No, we don't. And the arrest wasn't really connected to these particular murders that they're attributing to. Who, he has a couple other names as well as List, the Gildo Killer, the Gilgo Beach Killer, the Manorville Butcher, and the Craigslist Ripper. And the arrests that have been made or were made were about a different guy who was convicted of killing two women. None of the women who are under the Craigslist Ripper case. So it's a little misleading when you look at it, but you're right. This guy kind of falls into the perfect scenario that we were talking about last week, that serial killers have evolved, and that's why you don't see so many, or we don't hear about them. And this guy does something that we spoke about last week, which was that if you don't find bodies, you don't find evidence. And without evidence, it's very hard to not only arrest somebody, but even know the serial killer is actually working that area. And what happened is happened with this case.
So we're going to get into that. And first, I want to implore all of you to follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Death Row Diaries, and to check out our Patreon feed. That is patreon.com/deathrowdiaries, where you'll get bonus content that we don't discuss on the regular show. Now, are we going to agree that this is one guy? There's a lot of murders and there's a lot of suspects. Are you confident that this is one person, one killer?
This is one killer. This is one male killer. He's not a female. This guy is male.
And initially, there was an MO, which was that the bodies were identified as being similar and that they were wrapped in burlap, but that seems to have been discontinued as the bodies keep piling up. So why are you, seems like you're pretty certain that it is one person, but how do you arrive at that conclusion?
Well, the burlap sacks was something that he had available to him. This wasn't that he worked at a burlap sack place, or he had probably a couple of them laying around. They were extra, and he didn't use them. That he changed what he put the bodies in makes very little difference here. The point is that he dismembers the bodies, he puts them around the area, which is, you know, that beach, the south shore of Long Island. And we see this his MO isn't the burlap sacks. That just happens to be a coincidence. He had them around the house and he used them. But when we start seeing his, what we consider a signature, he likes to cut the bodies up. Whether that's for transportation issues or because he enjoys it, we don't know because of the amount of time that's happened or passed since he killed and then the bodies were discovered. And this is exactly what we were talking about before. This is a killer whose work is not discovered till 14, 15, 16, 30 years later. So by that time, the bodies are decomposed so bad, they're basically skeletal remains. So it's difficult to see or look at evidence when there is none there. Now, they could see tool marks on how they cut the bodies and that thing, those type of deals. But we don't have evidence, and this is the perfect, what I talk about. So this guy used some of the social media sites. He started using the internet. He began to evolve. It's not a big evolvement, but this is the reason they call him the Craigslist killer or ripper. He would solicit women who were sex workers who advertised their trade on Craigslist. He'd make dates with them, and they would disappear. This is where this guy really begins. But Craigslist didn't happen until, you know, the 90s. He was doing this prior to this, and we'll discuss that why. But so let's discuss how these bodies began to pop up. So in December of 2010, a police officer by the name of John Mila, or Milaya, and his canine partner were looking for a woman named Shannon Gilbert, and she was a sex worker who had gone missing in May, 6 months prior. And she was also a Craigslist sex worker, or advertised on there, and she was supposed to meet a client in Oak Beach. And she disappears. So this officer is looking for Shannon Gilbert. What he runs across is he finds skeletal remains of a woman in a burlap sack. And it wasn't Shannon Gilbert. The body was much older than the 6 months. And then they begin to search. They expand the search, and they discover three more bodies of women dumped near the dunes of the beach where there's thick weeds and small trees along the roadside. So now you have four bodies, and they call these four the Gilgo Four. And right away, because of the way they were found, all them burlap sacks, all of them partially dismembered, cut up, missing body limbs, they knew that they were dealing with a serial killer. From the beginning, they knew it.
And their response was criticized. There's a lot of ways we can go here, but what do you think of the initial response by law enforcement?
Well, see, it's very hard for law enforcement to understand or take everything into account within a split second. They find the bodies, and of course, they report it, the media gets hold of it, and they're expecting an answer. It's very difficult for law enforcement to come up with a clear picture of what's going on here by just finding skeletal remains. There's very little of any evidence there. So whatever they put out, well, it's going to be criticized because there's not a whole lot of evidence there, a whole lot of stuff to talk about. So, it's really difficult to criticize them because this killer knows what he's doing. And I'm willing to bet that those bodies weren't there since 1990s. Those bodies, after being placed somewhere where he had them safe, when he got ready, he dumped them. It could have been 6 months, a year prior to that, but they weren't there the whole time.
Have they stopped finding bodies?
No, absolutely not. No, these were just the first four that they found. And they did do a bit of research and they identified the bodies. Once they identified them, that's how they understood how long this guy's been working. So they first identified Megan Waterman. She's 22 years old. Then Maureen, and I'm going to mess up her last name. It's Barnes. She was 25. Then Melissa Bartholomew. She's 24. Amber Costello. And these women were all sex workers. And they advertised on Craigslist. And all were found in burlap sacks. It took law enforcement a few weeks to figure out that they were all strangled to death. So that's how they knew it was a serial killer. But there was not a whole lot of other evidence there. Specifically because these women had disappeared decades before them. So no one knew what was going on. So here it comes again. The following year, 6 months later, 4 months later, four more bodies are discovered. A mile to 3 miles from the first four. But these were not found in burlap sacks. And it's still what they had not found, Shannon Gilbert, who sparked the entire search. So they have four victims, eight victims now. And one of them is identified as Jessica Taylor. She's 20 years old. And she's been missing since 2003. So it's been 7 years or 8 years since she had been missing. Also a sex worker. And she was found without heads or hands. Now, her hands and head were later found in Gilgo Beach. The other three bodies at this point are not identified. So they're described as Jane Doe, number six. She was found dismembered. Another victim was a young Asian male, but was a trans woman, a transgender woman. And the fourth victim that was found was a toddler, a little girl of about between 16 and 24 months. These are the last four victims that were found.
So with Shannon Gilbert, she calls the police that night. She had gone to do an appearance at a party. And she says someone's trying to kill her. We know whose party it was. And we also know, you know, when this guy's contacting all these sex workers on Craigslist, you know, you can trace IP addresses and all this.
You have 60 seconds remaining.
So I'm kind of wondering from an outside perspective, it seems like the guy is catchable, and yet he's not.
Well, sure, he can be caught, but they're not catching him because he understands the limitations of law enforcement at that time. We were also living a different time. In the 90s, the internet was new. We didn't have cameras on each street corner. Every store didn't have a camera. They did. The tape was erased the following day. So this guy was counting on really law enforcement and technology not having the ability to back things up for years or months or however long he wanted. So how was he contacting these people? And he was not leaving any type of address or digital footprint, if that's what you want to call it. He was buying burner phones. And back then, you could buy them in any liquor store across the state. It didn't have to be one place or another place. You could just walk into any store, a Walmart, a Walgreens, a 7-Eleven, and pick these things up without a problem. And no one would know any better.
Oh, can you not do that now? Do you have to, like, do they register your ID on a burner phone or something like that?
Sure, but you can use fake ID, couldn't you? No one's asking you for your driver's license to see it. These are all done with emails and things like that. So it's very easy this guy can get away with it. Because back then, they didn't have the technology to start searching every liquor store from here to Long Island. It's just, it wasn't done that way. I don't believe they had the technology. And if they did, we have to also have to understand that these are sex workers. These are sex workers. And we've talked about this before, that at this time, usually, law enforcement, when as soon as they find out that it's a sex worker, someone in that trade, they don't really spend as much time looking for the person because they're considered by law enforcement to be almost expendable. And we've talked about cases where this happened in the past. The gentleman that we talked about in Los Angeles, the Grim Sleeper, was a perfect example. He's killing sex workers, and no one's really paying that much attention to it, and they're dropping from every corner in the city.
Right. And maybe this particular department had kind of a blasé attitude about it, because it didn't seem like they cared that much to outside observers.
Well, you also had a police chief at the time by the name of Burke, and he seemed to have a special interest in the case. And at one point, he was basically stopping the FBI or withholding evidence from the FBI to really investigate the case thoroughly. And later we find out that this guy is arrested for assault of a person. He's given 40 or 46 months in federal prison because of conspiracy, assault, and a number of other crimes. So he becomes right away the suspect as to that he's committing these crimes, but they're off the track. Burke may be a terrible guy. He is not the Long Island serial killer. I can guarantee you that. He's not the guy.
And what makes you say that? Because a lot of people think he is.
Well, yeah, because every time that someone sees, like, Jack the Ripper, because he was cutting women's, spleens out and livers out, right away he's a surgeon. So people are looking for doctors. This guy, because he got away with, buying phones and been able to really hide from law enforcement, well, everybody thinks he's a cop. So the perfect subject is, of course, the chief of police. Why not him? But he doesn't fit what I would consider is kind of a profile. I always talk kind of bad about profilers, and they say, well, the guy's male, below 40 years of age, low self-esteem, and all these things they talk about. That's great. It's easy to use that as kind of a generalization, but you can also use it to eliminate someone. And based on what I know of these cases, the chief of police named Burke is not your killer. He doesn't fit the profile of a person that would do this. He's risen too high in the police and law enforcement. He has obviously a relationship with people that if he would act this way or in a manner which would call attention to himself, would immediately be noticed. He's a person which has a lot of ambition. Now, we can look at someone like Gacy and BTK, and they had similar backgrounds, but they were all novices at being police officers or law enforcement. This guy doesn't fit the profile that I would put next to a guy who is killing, dismembering, killing children, killing men. There is a particular hatred to this person that's killing. The person who is the Long Island serial killer hates, and I mean this with a capital H, he hates women, specifically sex workers. He's killing because he hates their trade, he hates himself, and I would go as far as saying is that he has dabbled in being gay, and I believe he probably is bisexual. And the reason I say this is because he kills an Asian transgender woman. And this is a guy who crossed over from women to men. And it seems to fit that he is doing this because there's a hatred there, there's a motivation there, and he likes to control. he controls and he cuts up his members because it gives him a position or a place of complete control over his victims and of their bodies when they're actually already deceased. So this guy is not the chief police. This guy is a highly disturbed individual who is cunning and intelligent, but he's not a cop. He reads books. I'd say he spends time on the internet looking at police tactics. He watches true crime drama. He watches police shows, and he's learned from that.
So you don't think it's someone that Burke knows that he's covering up for? Because it does seem like Burke is covering something up. Who knows what that could be? Why would you not want the FBI involved? I would think if you're trying to solve a crime, you want all the help you can get, and the FBI is pretty capable.
Absolutely. But I would say that that's not the... I believe the reason that Burke has dissuaded or covered things up so the... or not been cooperative with the FBI is no different than any other police force. It's a pissing contest. This guy did not want the FBI to come in, step on his toes, and solve the case, or step on his toes and take over. They always say, this is my jurisdiction. Or this is what we're talking about. This is just playing ego between cops. I don't think he's covering for another law enforcement officer. I don't believe any of those things. I think this guy just wanted to have control of the case. It's that simple. He's a micromanager. That's it.
All right, so this is kind of confusing because it's a departure from the normal thing with this guy. Is near Jones Beach, they find another woman, but they also find a child. So what could possibly explain that?
Yeah, that's a head scratcher, because Jane Doe, who is number three, she's identified by DNA to be the mother of the toddler. So again, you immediately think, well, what mother would take her toddler with her to perform a sex act? I mean, there are people that I'm sure that do. But it does throw you for a loop, because it doesn't seem that a mother would do that. But later on, we fast forward to 2016, the DNA, then... because the body was, the mother, number three, the body was found in pieces. So in 2016, number three is linked to a torso found in Hampstead Park in 1997. And they didn't know who she was, but they had named her Peaches because of a tattoo on her chest. But the killer had gone very far in removing the tattoo. He disfigured it. Because he didn't want anybody to identify the person. They only knew her as Peaches because she had peaches on her, the tattoo was of peaches. She was an African-American woman, and the child was also an African-American child. And that's how they linked it, and that's how they began to figure this guy had been killing in 1996, 1997. But also, DNA of Jane Doe number seven, because her legs were actually found in Fire Island in 1996. Now the police department and the authorities are figuring, okay, we have a serial killer who's been killing for decades. He's kept the bodies, some he's left there, some he hasn't. He basically controls the narrative by keeping pieces to himself and other pieces he's leaving there. So you're not getting a full picture of what you're looking for. That's his process. That is part of his gratification. He's killing, and he's only giving as much as he wants to give them, to give them kind of a teaser. And that's part of his control as well.
Yeah. And they don't really have much on this guy. I mean, do you think that there's information that they're not informing the public of, that they have a strong suspect, that they're close to making an arrest, or do they pretty much have no idea, any more idea than they did 10 years ago?
I think they have no idea who he is. Yes, but I do believe that they always keep certain information, and it's smart to do this, not to release it to the public. Because if you have information, maybe a sample, something that the killer screwed up and left, you don't want to give him a heads up, hey, we have this, and now you're screwed because he'll cover his tracks. Maybe they get lucky and he does it again. You know, when you do something by practice, you kind of fall into that practice. I think this serial killer is very intelligent. I think he's disturbed too. There are people that are very disturbed, but function. And only in certain situations does that other side come out. So if I were to guess, the police department has some information they haven't released. They're going to keep that information until more bodies they find more bodies. Here's the problem with that theory and that particular stance. He's been killing at least since 1996. So we're now in 2023. That is a long time. That's several decades. The chances that this guy started killing in 1996 at the age of 20 is very slim to none. I'd bet against that. In 1996, I'd imagine this guy's probably around the age of 40. And he's been doing this a lot longer. So, if he was 40 in 1996, we're talking over 20 years. He's got to be in his 60s or close to 70. A lot of serial killers at that age, because their testosterone levels have really declined, their sexual drives have declined, it kind of changes the chemistry of their brain. It changes the chemistry of their needs, and they slow down. The Golden State Killer comes to mind, a guy who had done it so long, never got caught, and retired. Let me call back. Hey, Matt.
So why do you think the guy was like 40 when he started or when these bodies piled up? What's your thinking on the timeline?
Because he already had developed a signature, he developed an MO, and he knew what he wanted. It's very rare when a serial killer at age 20 or 25 already knows exactly what he wants to do, especially this type of serial killer that has his motivations are only in control and maybe sexual gratification. Other serial killers who kill for, they mix their particular brand of acts, they may start earlier. But this guy, because he's so developed already, he's cutting bodies, leaving limbs, he's doing, you know, to actually chop up a body, that's a huge undertaking. So, you know, in 1996, I say he's 40 already because he's already highly developed, number one. Number two, these are the bodies that we have found, and we've now realized this guy is very intelligent. He left bodies that he left bodies he wanted discovered. There is evidence to prove that he started as early as 1982. So let me touch on that. And I don't want to mess up her last name. Her name, in 1982, Tina Foglia was seen alive February the 1st at Hammerhead's Rock Music venue. She was found on February the 3rd, and her body was dismembered in three separate plastic bags. And they were found a few miles from Robert Moses Causeway, which leads right into Gilgo Beach. So this guy could be active in 1982. And if he is in 1982, because the MO changes slightly, there's three separate bags, plastic bags, he's dismembering, he puts them close to Gilgo Beach. I would go as far as saying is Tina Foglia was a victim of the Long Island serial killer.
So, obviously this guy's disturbed. Is he too disturbed to hold down a regular job? I mean, I'm sure he could have kind of a blue-collar job, you know, laying brick or something. Is he too disturbed to be a police officer or someone in like city government or something like that?
He is not. From what I can see from in his actions, because he goes to such an extreme when he kills, chopping off bodies, dismembering them, leaving parts here, parts over here. He's in Fire Island, leaving parts of a body. He goes to a different place, leaves another one. He really enjoys what he's doing. So because he goes so far, I'm willing to bet that his normal life is extremely controlled. He can work any job, including city worker, government, dentist. He could be whoever he wants to be. This guy has a tick that he satisfies with extreme violence and extreme personal violence. He strangles his victims to the left. That's a highly personal thing. And he does so barehanded. So to do that, you have to be strong, and you have to have a huge hatred for women in general. You don't, I guess the guy runs you off the road, he kills your dog, and you attack him. But this guy, he's killing over and over and over, and he's doing so at such extreme measures, there could be only one conclusion, and that is that he hates women, hates the sex trade, he's probably, in some ways, impotent, and I would say that he's probably bisexual on top of that.
I would think that he is a boring-looking guy. I would almost think he's got to be a white guy in my reasoning. And tell me what you think about this, but New York is like a pretty heavily monitored area compared to other parts of the country. There's a lot of cameras. There's a lot of police, actually. They'll stop and frisk you if you're black. I feel like this guy couldn't have anything that stood out too much, even like long red hair or a long beard or something. I feel like this guy just looks like a dentist or a city councilman.
That's very possible. But you also have to understand that we do have mostly, well, they're all women and one male, and we have a person who crossed not only gender lines, but one that crossed, race lines, too. Usually, serial killers normally kill their own race. Now, we have had many that don't, but because he killed an African-American woman, dismembered her, and we know it was a Long Island serial killer, and because he also killed the child, it's very interesting and probably a stretch, but I think I'm on the right trail here, that he killed the child because she was a product of her mother's actions. So this guy hates so much. He hates the trade, the sex trade, women's parts, the woman, the gender itself. He hates it so much that the product, which is the child, he also killed the child. Now, I will say this, and I'm hoping I'm not going to really upset too many people here, because I'm gonna say something that's going to be controversial, but I want you to understand why I'm saying it. So earlier I said he might be bisexual, and I was only giving you the tip of the iceberg. I think that the Long Island serial killer is not only bisexual, but I would go as far as saying that he's a cross-dresser as well. And the reason I say this is because he is using women as a surrogate for killing a piece of himself. He's dressing as a woman. He hasn't decided to go fully transgender. He enjoys being a woman, but he hates it as well. And because he killed number three's child, I believe because he cannot have children, that also upset him even highly. It upset him to the point of murder. So this is a highly disturbed individual, but he can function, and I'm willing to bet that he functions very well in society, and he is kind of a preview, if you will, of what I talked about last week, of an individual, about serial killers that begin to evolve. They begin to use the internet. They begin to use the tools available to them, and they study law enforcement techniques to really eliminate evidence being found.
What about the significance of the size of the victims? If you're browsing for sex workers on Craigslist, not all of them are petite, I would say. Most probably aren't. These women were all around 5 foot tall. One was 5'5", which is still small. But you think there could be any significance to the size, the fact these are small people?
Well, he does have he has a type, obviously. He has a type he likes. Very petite women, not very heavy. We can read into it and say, well, he's probably very small as well. And that's the reason that he's able to, well, basically force them or be able to control them. But it could go even deeper than that, and I'm making this guy sound to be very disturbing. I think he is. It could be that he is, because he's big, probably burly, and he hates that these women naturally are petite women, and it bothers him.
Because he can never have that.
He can never have it, just like he can never have a child. So how did he take that anger out? He kills the mother, then he kills the child. He can't be small. So he really hates these sex workers. He's a serial killer. He kills the ones that he wants to be but can't. It's almost like possessing them, almost for a very brief time. And when he's in charge of the body, he almost dominates the body, and he becomes the body. And because he dismembers them, he also begins then to understand and feel that he has so much control of the body that he almost becomes the person. This guy is highly disturbed, as I said, and highly intelligent. This guy is not going to get caught. Unfortunately, he knows too much. And by now, I'm willing to bet that he's already retired.
Is it possible that he had a mother, stepmother, ex-wife that was a sex worker?
It's very possible. And sometimes that is a focal point for them. Not that that is why they do it, but they're going to kill anyways. But what really gets them going is that maybe that his mother or person close to him was a sex worker and she abused him. Or maybe she didn't abuse him, but he saw what she went through. There's different reasons why people do things. And really the question is that the reason he does it? The reason he does it is because he's wired that way. He needs to kill. That's what he does. He needs to dominate, kill, and control. So, and one thing we haven't talked about with this guy is, and I'm sure that the audience who are followers of true crime and serial killers know that he's a very organized killer. He's not a disorganized killer. He doesn't kill by chance. He plans things out very well. I'm willing to bet that before he killed these women, he looked at their profiles, studied them for a long time, downloaded their pictures, looked at their pictures, talked to them on the phone several times, and knew exactly where they would be, how they would act, what he probably spoke to them many times in person prior to him actually doing this, or at least he stalked them for a while before he acted. He's very organized.
Well, we also might have some listeners that watch the news, you know, the national news, and they say, well, Bill, wait a minute. They caught the Long Island serial killer. His name is John Bitroff. He's a carpenter in Manorville, New York, and this is the guy. They pinned some stuff on him, and he's got to be responsible for all these other murders.
Correct. Yeah, that's ludicrous. He was convicted of killing two sex workers he killed between 1993 and 1994. They say that this guy could be him. He's a carpenter. He lived very close. He was named as a suspect, but he doesn't fit the profile, and they've actually excluded him as being the Long Island serial killer. So that is not true at all. And in 2020, they found, or they perhaps the information that there was a belt found with the initials HM or WH, whichever way you look at it, that was found near the victims that they believe belonged to the serial killer. I disagree completely. I don't think a serial killer that organized just leaves his belt, because the location where the bodies were left is not where he killed them. He just left them there, or he brought them back there, but he's not going to leave that belt.
Well, if so, he did, yeah, it's just a total, like, red herring, right? Like, obviously he's not going to leave his belt with his initials on it.
Correct. And then also in 2019, Jane Doe 6, through a genetic genealogy match, was found to be Valerie Mack, who was also known as Melissa Taylor. So we know now who these women are. We don't know who the killer is. And there are several other cases of women that disappeared and died. In 2007, a woman with a tattoo of cherries. They called her Cherry. And she was dismembered like the other kills as well. So, and they tried to disfigure the tattoo so they couldn't identify her. Let me call back. I'm back. Okay.
Do you like any of the suspects that, I don't know, you see on Reddit that are considered, you know, legitimate suspects, viable suspects that people talk about? There's, just let me know if any one of these jumps out. Joseph Brewer, Peter Hackett, James Bissett.
Yeah, you know, James Bissett killed himself 2 days after Shannon Gilbert was found. He had a business, which had a nursing business that had burlap sacks, and he provided all the burlap sacks in the region. Yeah, I don't like any of these guys. It's too convenient that, you know, the nursery had burlap sacks, so why did he stop using them? I believe that he used them because they were available. He had four of them, or however many it took to do that, and then he just, you know, he didn't have any more, and he used something else. With these cases right here, just because he didn't use a burlap sap doesn't mean he changed. It just wasn't available. That's it. It can be that simple. People put too much into these. Well, she was found in a, you know, blue burlap sap, and if you find a person in a green one, well, it can't be the same person. In those situations, it really is opportunity. And I don't believe that this guy, he controls the body so much, he controls the person so much, he controls the narrative, that I don't think he can care less about what he puts the bodies in. So I don't like any of these guys. The police chief, John Bitchikoff, or whatever how you say his name, James Bissett, Peter Hackett, Joel Ratcliffe. I mean, all these guys, sure, they're guys that could be considered suspects, but they didn't arrest them for a reason. And at this point, so many bodies, it's a lot of public pressure. If there was anything that these guys saw in these guys, they would have arrested them, and they didn't. So the Long Island serial killer is still out there. Probably retired now, probably in his early 70s, really can't do what he was doing before. And as I said before, sometimes the chemical makeup of a person's brain, because of testosterone, all those things that make a man what he is, change. And he loses that intent. He loses that hunger. It happens to a lot of men. Look, well, I don't know if it happens to you, but a lot of men have problems later on in life because they can't perform sexually. And they frustrate them, but they become very subdued. They don't seek the sex because they really can't have it. There's not a drive for it. I believe serial killers are similar. When they get older, their chemical makeup changes. They no longer have that particular set of wires firing a certain way. And they lose interest. They stop doing it. Or other things take over their lives. They don't have to kill anymore. They can relive the events that took place in their life where they did kill. Or they have souvenirs. We saw a lot of these guys bury the bodies under their house so they can keep reliving it. A form of complete control.
Well, they can watch They can watch a Netflix series about themselves. You know, that's like a comedian making Johnny Carson in the 1970s.
Yeah, pretty much. There's a lot of things into the situation, but there's the possibility that he was arrested for something else. And he's in prison right now. Maybe that's the reason. There's many reasons, but I don't think so. I think that because there is no DNA, they have no real evidence. I think the guy just, like a lot of serial killers, about 2,000 of them since the 70s, that they've never been located, they've never been arrested. And more we're going to see serial killers that don't need the media attention. They don't care if they're being called this or that or given a nickname like we've seen in the past. They will simply kill, dismember the body, and hide it so they're not being found, so it kind of, they're not detected. And I think that is how this new serial killer, this new breed, is going to start acting. He doesn't need the acknowledgement of anybody. He's doing this for one reason. For himself. That's it.
Let's talk about Peter Hackett real quick. He fits your description in that he's an older, I think retired guy. And he started calling Shannon Gilbert's mom and sister and making obscene phone calls to them, inserting himself into the situation. And I don't think anyone really thinks that he did it, but how dangerous is a guy like that? Is he doing other things?
No, I think this guy just got his jollies off of calling the victim's family and tormenting them. This guy is not the killer. And they also had another guy calling up the sister of Melissa... Bartholomew. I'm so horrible at names. So this guy calls her like every other day and he's asking her questions that if she's a whore like her sister and all these terrible things you're telling a victim's family. I would bet my entire, well, I don't have much of a retirement plan, but I would bet anything that that isn't the killer either. This guy is not the type of guy who is seeking acknowledgement. How he hid the bodies and they turned up decades later tells you that. These other guys, that guy probably found her phone and he started making phone calls with it. And he learned that she had disappeared or maybe the phone was left at her house. He picked it up. He made it sound like he was the killer. That's not the killer. It doesn't fit. It goes against everything the killer stands for and what his MO is like, or his signature. His signature tells you who he is. But these guys that we're calling, those guys are just clowns.
So what would it take to find this guy? At this point, would it have to be just a DNA match where he was picked up for something else? And you think he's done dumping bodies, they're not going to trace him that way?
I don't think they have any DNA on him because the bodies are found so many years later. There is no DNA on the body. Now, it's possible. We know that in 1977, Joseph Nasho killed a young girl named Roxanne, and they found DNA evidence. But the DNA evidence was collected right away. The body was found not too long after the murder. These bodies weren't found until decades later. Any trace element, any fibers, any DNA is long gone. This guy is not going to get caught. He did what he was supposed to do to avoid detection. At this point, it doesn't matter what they find. It's been so broken down with the environment, the elements, the water, the sand, the wind. Everything is contaminated. There's no way they're going to catch this guy. Unless he starts to kill me again. Makes a blunder mistake. I don't think he's going to kill again.
Well, I guess we'll leave it there until next time. Bill, next episode, we're going to talk about the district attorney of Los Angeles, and that is Gascon. Now, you can't vote. Unfortunately, I don't think that's right, but you can't vote. Would you have voted for him if you had the right?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I don't like politicians. You guys probably didn't guess that, but look, this guy has a pretty good grasp of what's going on. He's getting kind of a bad rap, and people are going to say, oh man, well, of course Bill's going to say this. He's in prison, he's a criminal, and of course he likes guys who are soft on crime. Everybody's got this mixed up, and we're going to go into details why. Yeah, Stone really is saving the taxpayer a lot of money, and you have to understand that Gascon is the one that makes the arrest. It's law enforcement that makes the arrest. And there's a lot of talk about that criminals are heading all to LA because they know they're not going to get prosecuted. Whoever thinks that is a freaking moron, okay? There has been a criminal in history that thought, gee, listen, Bartholomew, let's go rob a bank in Los Angeles because they're not going to prosecute us. It's ridiculous. Let's talk about this next time because I'm sure there's going to be a lot of controversy with what I have to say about this. But it's based on facts. And I think this guy's getting kind of a bad rap.
Well, you heard him. Until then, I've been Matt Ralston.
And I'm willing to be safe, be aware of your surroundings. We'll see you next time.